You're listening to The Weird Sisters, Harry Potter Reread, Episode 60. On today's show, we discuss Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Chapters 16, 17, and 18. Hello and welcome to The Weird Sisters. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Allison.
Okay, so we pick up with another bad thing that has happened. Ron just left at the end of last chapter.
Yes. Abandoned us.
Abandoned us. But we also found out about the Sword of Gryffindor.
Well, sort of.
Sort of.
We found out it's fake.
Yes, the one being...
there's a fake.
The one being stored in Gringotts is a fake. And we've put two and two together that Dumbledore used the sword to destroy a Horcrux because it's imbued with basilisk venom. Oh, crap. Maybe we need that.
Right.
Right. And on this episode, we're going to attempt to find it because that's the only direction we have.
Well, sort of. Hermione's kind of trying to find it. Harry's just following his whims and fancy.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's true. I suppose their motivations are slightly different. But anyway, Ron's just left and we have this horrible moment where they're like taking their time packing up camp, trying to find excuses to wait, because when they leave, Ron can't come back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah. I mean, eventually they leave. Hermione's a mess. Harry does not comfort her.
Well, I don't know how much comfort he would really be.
That's true.
I mean, Harry's committed, or Hermione is committed to the cause and to Harry, but, like, it's already bad enough. Now Ron has left, like, which is hurtful in many ways. And, yeah.
And importantly, there's a line about how Harry and Hermione are stepping around Ron's name. They're not saying it.
Right. I mean, no need to acknowledge the fact that he left.
But do you remember why this is sort of important?
Is that how he finds them later or something?
Yeah. Like, when he's clicking the Deluminator, he hears them talking and mention his name. And it's like the first time they've said his name in forever.
Okay.
I don't think the mechanics are quite, they're not, it's not in detail, but I do remember that when he sort of first realizes what the Deluminator is doing, it's when they're saying his name. But right now they're not doing that. So, I mean, they're doing nothing, just like they were without Ron, right? I mean, with Ron.
Now they're just extra sad and lonely.
Yeah. They've taken to bringing out good old Phineas and questioning him.
Again, I still think this is a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, and the only thing they seem to discover is that, you know, Ginny and the DA are getting into more hijinks.
Mm-hmm.
There is a little nice scene where he's looking at the Marauder's map and just staring at Ginny's dot.
Is that a nice scene or a creepy scene?
I don't know that it's creepy.
It's a little weird. Though it is, like, initially he's like, well, it's sort of this angry looking for Ron to stroll into Hogwarts, you know, embracing the comforts that it provides.
Yeah, let someone else be in charge is what he says. Unfortunately, can't do that, Harry.
Yeah, no.
Okay, but we're making a tiny bit of progress on the whole, like, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows thing. I do remember, even though I read this book, like, in a day and a half, I do remember being like, what the hell are the Deathly Hallows?
Well, you would have
still haven't gotten there.
Yeah. Before it came out, you'd think it'd be like, Harry Potter hunting the Horcrux. You know, something to that effect. And then you're like, is this a weird name for the Horcruxes? But yeah, we're, I don't know, a third of the way through the book and we still don't know what they are.
Yeah, we still haven't even heard the words.
No.
Well, and you're right, like, okay, the Horcruxes was a huge bomb that was dropped on us the last half of the last book. Yeah, and I mean, this is kind of what it's about, but apparently not according to the title.
Yeah, how does that even, I mean, that whole thing didn't even really have to be in there, technically.
What?
The Deathly Hallows.
Yeah. We should come back to that at the end of the book.
Okay.
And see, like, what we think of this whole Deathly Hallows business. Because I kind of get what you're saying. You could have written a very similar book without them.
Yeah. I mean, you, like, it adds a little bit to sort of the Dumbledore lore.
Yes. Yeah, okay, yes. That's probably the biggest contribution.
But even still, I don't think it was necessary, per se.
Yeah, that doesn't mean it was bad. Let's talk about bad.
It's just, like, it does. It throws you off the scent a little bit.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That definitely does that. Okay, but the little hint we're getting is that Hermione's looking at her book again, and she notices that above this one story, this isn't a picture printed in the book. It's been drawn in.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry says, that's that symbol, Grindelwald's mark, that Xenophilius Lovegood was wearing and that Crumb got all bent out of shape about.
Yeah, and well, Hermione questions it too. Like, if this is Grindelwald's mark, wouldn't it have been recognized in this book? Or why isn't it more widely known?
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know if that's super satisfactorily answered. Because it was, like, the Deathly Hallows were kind of this cultish thing, mm-hmm. that a lot of people didn't really believe. I don't know.
But not actually invented by Grindelwald.
No.
So, I mean, but again, we still don't even get the words. We don't even talk about the story that it's inked over.
No.
So. But, I mean, then all of a sudden, Harry, who's been pushing for Godric's Hollow, you know, for a myriad of reasons, his parents, Bathilda, Dumbledore,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden Hermione's like, yeah, the sword's probably in Godric's Hollow. We should go there.
Though, lays out the bombshell that, oh, Godric Gryffindor is from Godric's Hollow.
Yeah, Harry's a bit dense on that one.
Yeah. I mean, like, this was a magical village. Like, there are all these important people from there because magical people like to hang out together.
Yeah. So, I suppose fitting for Harry to be from Godric's Hollow, right?
Yes. Well, and, I mean, Harry, like, kind of half knows it, but knowing Voldemort, who has this sense of importance about things, right? That was an important place for him, just in a negative way.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, okay.
I mean, shoot, there could be, like, a Horcrux in his crib.
That, boy. I don't know about that, but okay. His greatest defeat? Well, there was a Horcrux in the crib. Harry Potter. Anyway, so and Harry's like, oh yeah, the sword, sure, probably is there. Yep, let's go. I totally agree with you. That's why I would definitely want to go. It's not anything else. I don't know what you're talking about.
Not blind emotion.
Yeah. So they procure some disguises.
Right. That good old Polyjuice potion.
Yes. Extremely important.
Though I have noticed in this book that now your voice changes, and it didn't used to change when you took Polyjuice Potion.
Really?
Yes. When they did it, when they were Crab and Goyle, their voices did not change. I don't think, I hope I'm not being influenced by the movies. Maybe I am. Now I'm questioning myself. I really don't think it did, but now it does.
Well, it's now our go-to. Polyjuice is just a fact of life now. So they go there. It's night. It's snowing. It's Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Harry's like, let's just go for it. We don't need to hide under the cloak. We're muggles. No one cares.
Yeah. And they discover a memorial.
Yeah, that reveals itself to wizards.
Mm-hmm. There's a statue of his parents and Harry. That's nice, I guess.
Weird to see yourself as a statue.
Yeah, I suppose most people who are statues are dead.
Yeah.
So, and then they go through the graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, many recognizable names here. Mm-hmm. But they first find Kendra and Ariana's grave.
Yes.
And on Ariana's, it says, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also."
What does that even mean? Am I supposed to know what that means?
I mean, I think you're supposed to know what it means in retrospect. Because Harry himself reflects upon this line and he thinks, surely Dumbledore is the one who chose this line.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's think about how Ariana died.
See, I don't really remember.
Okay. Well, I took it as this is Dumbledore, like, chastising himself. Right? Because he blames him. He might have even killed Ariana. He doesn't know. And he blames himself for what happened to her because he was off, right? His heart wasn't with his family. Right? He was feeling put upon and resentful, and he was caught up with Grindelwald. And then this happened. That's how I took it. I took it as a reproach on himself.
I could believe that.
You have any other ideas?
No.
Okay. I guess I initially read it that way. And then when Harry actually in his head, you know, thinks about the fact that Dumbledore would have chosen this line, then I felt like I was pretty confident that that's what it was supposed to mean.
Hmm. Yeah. And like here and in these chapters too, like he has, like Harry is feeling angrier and angrier towards Dumbledore. Like, oh, like he's imagining this moment where he could have come in safety, not in disguise, to Godric's mm-hmm. Hollow with Dumbledore. They could have looked at the graves of their dead family members close together and had a nice yeah. bonding moment. But oh no, like this was not, never did Dumbledore feel it relevant to tell me this, because it was not pertinent to what he was training Harry to do.
Well, in a lot of ways, it's not. And, like, it's not Harry's business.
Well, yeah, like, this, sure, like, there are other questionable things. But Harry gets a little bit of an overinflated sense of his intimacy with Dumbledore. Right?
Yeah.
And, like, in the limited time, he didn't have a chance to tell you the important things you did need to know for this job. So you wanted him to just, like, hang out and tell old stories and tell you the intimate details of his personal tragic life when he's, like, an old man, you're his student. Like, it doesn't quite make sense that Dumbledore would share that with you.
And it's not like he's sharing it with other people either.
Right. But Harry thought he had this great connection and now is, like, hurt that they didn't.
Yeah, and, okay, there's some possible truth to, like, Harry's hurt in that Dumbledore's interest in Harry, like, Dumbledore himself feels conflicted about it, right? Dumbledore wants to be more removed and attempts to separate himself actively.
Yeah. So,
because, like, it's the greater good, sort of, right? Like, he knows the significance of Harry and what needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Now, he's not heartless, right, Dumbledore? Mm-hmm. But he's also afraid of that he won't be able to do what needs to be done. That Dumbledore won't be able to do what needs to be done because it will hurt Harry.
Yeah. So why? I mean, I think it is, like, if he didn't have to go out and defeat the Dark Lord, maybe Dumbledore could have been, like, lovely, grandfathery, like, bring you up in the ways that you missed out on.
Sure.
Like,
you're an orphan, I knew your parents, yeah.
But otherwise, no.
Yeah, it's complicated. We also, very tiny foreshadowing, see a grave, an old grave, mm-hmm. that appears to have the Deathly Hallows symbol on it, and the person's name is Ignatius.
Yes.
But that's all we only know what that means in retrospect. Yes. And then we come to the parents' grave.
Yeah. Yep.
And then it says the last enemy that shall be destroyed is death.
Also kind of a weird sentiment.
Yeah. And Harry is upset at it at first.
Right. Like, it seems like almost a Death Eater mentality to overcome death.
Mm-hmm. But Hermione, you know, says it means, like, a life after death.
Right. And then, like, in some ways, Harry is that representation, too. Like, that, yes, they died, but they were able to save him. And
Yeah. And perhaps a little bit of foreshadowing of, I mean, they kind of come mm-hmm. back in the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and Harry. Okay, probably the bigger foreshadowing is, oh, yeah, Harry kind of dies, sort of.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, this is a very, like, somber, I don't know quite what the right word is for a chapter. Like, that's where the chapter ends. Then things are about to get crazy, but, like, this chapter is quiet and...
Right. He's like, standing there imagining their decayed bodies, but also, like, lives that could have been, and, yeah.
Yeah, I think that she writes it fairly well, is that he's not entirely comforted by this idea of life after death. He's like, well, yeah, but they're dead in the mm-hmm. ground. Like, it's not all... Oh, now I feel warm feelings inside. No. Which I think is good. Especially for a, like, children's mm. book. I mean, it still qualifies as young adult at this point, but, you know, definitely less children's than we started.
Like, Hermione makes a little wreath, which also seems like a terrible idea. Let me just announce that I am here.
What? They're disguised.
They were a wreath at the Potter's grave.
Well, there's a memorial of the Potters. I suppose they probably get wreaths. No, okay. Okay, well, then we move to Bathilda's Secret, where we're leaving the graveyard, and we saw the memorial in the last chapter, but now they see the cottage where Harry and his parents live.
They're just kind of walking around hoping to see a giant sign that says Bathilda lives here, because Hermione...
There's no phone book, I guess. Hermione
thinks that Bathilda has the sword. And yeah, but then they come, they see the cottage because the charm is broken. It's not a secret anymore.
Yeah. And they've left it destroyed.
Yeah.
Which is grisly. It is. And there's sort of a sign explaining what it is and why it was left there, and that people have been signing it and leaving messages to Harry.
Yeah, that's like sort of this, like, so we just were in the midst of this sort of sad reliving of terrible deaths and fate that has set us on this terrible path, and we're disconnected from everyone, and Ron has left, but people are there saying, like, giving words of encouragement and still kind of pinning their hopes on Harry, and yeah.
So yeah, the first little hint we have of what's kind of going on in the outside world, because they have no idea. Yeah. Okay, so then they start to get anxious because they feel like someone is watching them. So they put the cloak on. Doesn't help because a creepy old lady comes up to them and apparently can see through the cloak.
I was reading this at night and decided to stop here because I didn't want to read the rest at night.
Yeah, and she won't talk.
Right, but like they feel like she can see them, and Harry decides that it's Bathilda. Yeah.
Yeah, and so they follow her to her house.
Good plan.
And yeah, it's terrifying because smells.
Yeah, and when you know what actually is the case and they're describing like all the rankness, you're like, oh my gosh, this is disgusting. Because she has been dead and her food is molded and her body was probably decayed and...
Yeah, there's some line about her hands being, like, blue and knotty or something. I'm like, because it's dead. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, they're in her house. The locket is pulsing. I know. That can't be a good sign.
Well, didn't he have some, like, flash of Voldemort or something, too, and just ignored it?
And well, I guess he thinks the locket is pulsing because the thing that's going to destroy it is near. No, it's like, ooh, not my soul. It. Yes, another piece of my soul. And, okay, so they're in the house and everything's dusty and dirty and she's not using magic, still not talking. But he sees there's lots of empty picture frames, presumably taken by Rita. But one picture is the picture of our golden-haired thief.
Right, so Harry finally puts it together. Like, he saw that picture in Umbridge's office. In the book.
And in the book.
He saw him in Grigorovich's memory. Still don't know who he is.
Yes.
But friends with Dumbledore.
Yes. And now she makes them understand that Harry should go upstairs with her. And Hermione should stay downstairs.
That's just never good. Nope, maybe she just wants good. To give me the sword.
Maybe. So they get in the attic and she talks. Are you Potter?
Yes. Yeah.
And then, oh, as soon as you say yes, his scar overtakes him and he hears Voldemort's voice of hold him.
Right, and he's happy and he's flying. Like, yeah, it's like you're oscillating between Voldemort's feelings and thoughts and Harry's reality. But it almost seemed like Harry didn't quite realize what was happening yet. Then he sees the snake come out of her body. That is the most disturbing thing.
Yeah.
And then the snake attacks him and it's crushing him.
Then God.
Yes.
He loses his wand.
Hermione's probably like downstairs, like, oh, this maybe isn't good.
Yeah, I mean, so she comes flying up there and sort of rescues him.
But then, yeah, and it's, I don't, but Voldemort didn't quite make it there, but then it's all, like, the timeline is not explicit because all of these memories are happening.
Yes, because he's going back and forth between him and Voldemort, it's a little confused. But they essentially blow apart the house.
Right.
And Harry is able to communicate, he's coming. And they jump
Wait, did I miss that part?
Well, they do. They jump out the side of the house, and as Voldemort is appearing and apparate away. And, like, we see that from Voldemort's perspective.
I think I missed this.
Well, it is kind of confusing. I mean, but we see them apparating with Harry as Voldemort. And then, for reasons I really do not understand, other than narrative reasons, Harry is having visions or memories or something of Voldemort killing his parents.
It's like Voldemort arrived back to Godric's Hollow to get Harry, but he narrowly escapes again. So, like, there's maybe anger, but now he's taking a moment to reflect on how this happened the first time.
Is that what it is? Is that that Voldemort is actually remembering this? And because Harry's caught up in his head, he sees it too?
I think that's how it's made, how it's supposed to be. It seems a little, like, given that Voldemort has just been defeated again by poor timing, I don't know, you know, like, in this sort of somewhat non-believable way, that I'm not quite sure, because it seems like this very calm, thoughtful, like, I'm just going to reflect upon this, right? So that's what seems out of character a little bit. But yeah, I think he's contemplating his defeat.
Yeah, I mean, so we get to see
Voldemort's eyes. Which, and
as
that is, like,
Harry
as Voldemort killing his parents, which is super creepy.
Yeah. I mean, it's Halloween. He's walking to the house. James doesn't have his wand. Just kills him. Goes upstairs. Mother won't stand aside. Kills her. And then, like, we even experience Voldemort's shattering as he tries to kill Harry.
Like, oh, this little unknown enemy, but I will relish in its defeat. Oh, wait, I am breaking, must flee.
Mm-hmm. And then we get another brief vision of Voldemort, where he's picking up the photo of the thief.
Yeah, at Bathilda's.
Yes.
That's right.
And now he knows.
How does he not know
who the thief is?
I mean, if he's going to recognize Grindelwald, wouldn't he have recognized him before? Or he's just is going to go find out from a better picture.
I don't know. Maybe Voldemort wasn't too interested in history. Also, this is I was going to say it's a young Grindelwald, but I don't get the impression that Grindelwald ever got that old. But also, he's not expecting Grindelwald when he sees that memory with Grigorovich.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's out of place. Like maybe when you see an actor and you think trying to remember where the heck else you've seen them from, and you can't, you don't know.
I don't know. Like, Harry fails to put the pieces together. Seems like Voldemort should be able to figure it out. Well, and
well, he's Harry, going to figure like, it out.
Then is sort of coming back to himself because he had taken the picture, was trying to take the picture, and is upset because now it's lost, and now Voldemort will know, and it's because mm-hmm. is it just that he fears for this person that now Voldemort will be hunting him?
Well, I think he knows Voldemort wants to find him, so that can't be good.
But does he know that it, like, is a power play?
I just think it's good to oppose everything Voldemort wants. Yeah, so, I mean, he's been out now for hours, apparently.
Well, yeah, because he's, I mean, okay, so maybe that's another clue, like, about this whole scene. If for hours he's sort of in Voldemort's head, Voldemort had time to be angry and cool off and then contemplate.
Maybe. But that's kind of almost what makes me think it's meant to be a little more, I don't know what the right word is. Mystical is not quite the right word, but a little less like A happened, so B happened. Voldemort's thinking this, so I see it. And a little more like bigger picture. We're doing this because this is a narrative and I want you to see this. And this is an important thing for Harry to experience. Well,
sure. I mean, that's why it's there. I think for it to make sense with how Harry experiences this information, Voldemort has to be thinking it himself, and it's this strong emotion. And just as Harry just went to Godric's Hollow for the first time, and we're seeing all these things, and the statue, and the house, and we're thinking about this, and now Voldemort is returning to that same memorable place, and like, yeah, I mean, if obviously she wanted us to see that story, and now is the time to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, so if that's not traumatizing enough, his wand is irreparably broken.
I kind of forgot about this, too.
Yeah, and this just kills Harry. Not only because now I don't have a wand, but because he feels like this wand is a protection between him and Voldemort that he's now lost.
Yeah, he was kind of secretly counting on it. It's helped him in the past, right? In the graveyard, yes, and when he was attacked on his broomstick.
Yeah, that wasn't actually his wand, that second part, but he thinks it is.
Wait, what?
Well, it wasn't particular to that wand.
I don't think, right? We had this conversation, right? And we were unclear about it before.
Okay, that's true.
I thought you were advocating that it was, and I was advocating that it wasn't.
No. Well, no. I was advocating that. Oh, yes, he didn't do the spell. Like, that, with their flight from Voldemort, he didn't do it. Sort of, Harry's sort of right in that regard, when everyone else is telling him that people can do amazing things under stress, and he's like, no, I didn't do it. But I don't think it wasn't the twin core. It wasn't the specialness of his wand that did that. It was, again, I just think this is true. Maybe I'm wrong. That it was the bit of Harry, of the Horcrux in Harry, sort of interacting with Voldemort.
Again, why part of your soul would want to kill the other part of your soul? I don't quite understand.
But it didn't kill it. It just saved itself. That's what I'm saying.
By attacking itself.
Yeah, but it didn't kill it. Well, I know this will get resolved. We will talk about this, and we'll find out what the exact details are.
Well, and a wand seems like a very personal thing. I mean, yes. He sort of likens it to, right, like he was kind of crushed by Ron's blow and this leaving, and this has a similar feeling.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you're a wizard, Harry, and here's your magic wand.
And also, now I know that Grigorovich is dead, Ollivander's MIA. How do you even get a new wand now?
Yeah. He's just stuck borrowing Hermione's.
Well, and does, I mean, it kind of proves helpful. Like, it, this sort of helps make him master of the Elder Wand later. Yeah.
Because of the disarming of Draco. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I don't think it's an accident that she... that she breaks his wand. Okay, so then we move into the life and lies of Albus Dumbledore. So Hermione has snagged the book.
Well, yeah, when Harry was upstairs getting attacked by a snake in a lady, she was just casually reading some scandalous literature about Dumbledore.
Yeah. I mean, she knew that Harry wanted to read the book.
I don't know if he wanted to.
Well, he wants to. He feels like Dumbledore has been whitewashed. He doesn't want to hide from the book like Doge.
But he wants it to not be true.
Well, yeah, he's not skipping with glee, but he wants to read it out of righteous anger, I think. So anyway, Hermione has the book that we page through it to find that picture that Harry remembers from Dumbledore's office. Oh, the caption says Dumbledore with Grindelwald.
Right.
Oh, dear.
Well, and like in part because it's told to us in this book, right, Grindelwald was Voldemort before there was Voldemort. He just wasn't as popular in Britain, so that's that kind of the write-off for us not being aware of him up until this point.
Well, we've heard his name vaguely mentioned. I think he's on the card. He's on the chocolate frog card of Dumbledore.
Well, we know that he dueled him famously later.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so we're reading that chapter now that this picture appears in.
Yeah.
And we find out that, okay, so this, where she's at in the book is right after Dumbledore has to put his trip on hold after his graduation to come back and take care of his sister and his brother. Mm-hmm.
And Grindelwald just happens to be Bathilda's nephew or something and has been expelled from Durmstrang for questionable activities. Mm-hmm. And now the two of them become best buds.
Yes. Sort of like this one summer, basically. A summer romance, well, they essentially. Were both
great minds and great wizards and...
Okay, but it is also a summer romance, right?
Oh. Yeah, I guess.
Because that whole Dumbledore is gay thing doesn't come out until after all the books are out.
Yeah, right? She confirmed it later.
I mean, but certainly this has to be a part of it, right? I mean, yes, they're intellectual equals. They get along fabulously. But he's in love with him, too.
Oh. I guess
you've
not.
Never thought of that?
Or I didn't, I forgot.
I mean, people got cranky because, like, well, why does it matter to the story? Well, actually, I think it kind of does.
Like, it explains his action?
Well, I think it's an important part of it. No, if Grindelwald was some sort of idiot child, I don't think the same thing would have happened, right? But I definitely think that's a part of it.
But it was, wasn't it unrequited love?
I think that's open to interpretation. I don't think it matters either way. The effect is the same.
Okay.
And we never hear, I like to imagine, I mean, we never hear about any romantic relationships Dumbledore has later, which could just be, which maybe he did have them, but I think it fits better that he doesn't. Like, this is what happened that one time I met a nice boy. My sister died, and he was a dark wizard, and some bad crap happened, you know? So Rita is describing this friendship that is developing between them. How, you know, they were always swapping ideas and writing letters after spending all day together. This is a, you know, fast friends at first sight, at least, sort of thing. But then we get to, I mean, we're trying to keep in mind, oh, this is Rita Skeeter, right? Except then we get to a letter. From Dumbledore.
Yes.
It's not pleasant. Okay, on page 357 in mine, Gellert. Your point about wizard dominance being for the Muggles' own good. This, I think, is the crucial point. Yes, we have been given power, and yes, that power gives us the right to rule, but it also gives us responsibilities over the ruled. We must stress this point. It will be the foundation stone upon which we build. Where we are opposed, as we shall surely be, this must be the basis for all of our counter-arguments. We seize control for the greater good. And from this it follows that where we meet resistance, we must use only the force that is necessary and no more. This was your mistake at Durmstrang, but I do not complain, because if you had not been expelled, we would have never met. Albus.
I mean... Okay, I get that it's bad. But
yeah, it's bad.
This is technically kind of pre-Grindelwald taking over, or attempting to take over. It's the sort of plotting of that. So I don't know. Maybe this is like because I still really like Dumbledore that I try and clean it up a little bit. Because I don't think, so if things had gone differently, I don't think Dumbledore is going to be out there with Grindelwald, like, trying to do terrible things per se. Like, maybe, right at worst, it's like, it's saying that wizards should openly be in charge, but that would make everything better for everyone. And right, what is that? Is that Superman, Spider-Man? That's great power comes great responsibility. Batman? I don't know. It's one of those people, right? It's that mentality. I mean, you are. It's
yeah. Okay, he also
the Muggle Prime Minister, right? In that scene when he meets. Was it Fudge? And he's like, but you're wizards. Like, can't you guys figure all this out? Right? There is this sense, too, that, yeah, like, you could, couldn't you be doing great things and protective things and all of that?
That's how Dumbledore is trying to justify this to himself.
Yes.
Right. He's saying, oh, well, yeah, we're going to dominate them, but don't worry. It'll be for their own good. And he's not saying that we're not going to use force. He's saying that we should only use the force necessary. because Grindelwald got a little gleeful in his force at Durmstrong, which Dumbledore's okay with because that meant he came to Godric's Hollow. I mean, certainly in this letter, I think you can read that Dumbledore's not, you know, getting off on violence, no, necessarily. But I think that's the only good thing you can say about it. You're trying to pull Hermione here, right? Whitewash it all and say, it's fine. I mean, don't worry.
So if Ariana hadn't died, then what?
Then maybe Dumbledore does not become the Dumbledore that we know. Or maybe he does and has a change of heart.
And I guess you're supposed to say that, like, Ariana's death, like, propelled that change and made him staunch in it. But I think Dumbledore is still Dumbledore, right? I think that's still where he ends up. And maybe Grindelwald doesn't become the Grindelwald that he does, too. If Dumbledore is there sort of tempering it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can question maybe this impulse did not exist or was very, very small before he met Grindelwald. Right? I mean, he has a fantastic reputation as a student there, as someone who advocates for others, even as a very young person. I mean, now you could say, well, Ariana, his father was sent to Azkaban, and some messed up things happened to Ariana at the hands of some muggles. So at the very least, there's a seed there. A spark that could be fanned.
I mean, so he also is this, like, very accomplished already, promising wizard who, like, there is a sense, Dumbledore has some, he has an awareness of his greatness even then. And, like, he kind of, like, when we see him as an adult with Harry, it kind of comes out in these sort of charming ways. Like, yes, but I'm this accomplished wizard, right? So there's a touch of arrogance there, but also because he can back it up. And so, I mean,
yeah,
there is a little bit of, like, I'm clearly better than all of you here. But I don't, even in that letter, I don't know if I see it as, and I will lord it over you inferior things, but, like, this genuine, like, how can we kind of spread that wealth around?
Well, and, I mean, this is where I think a romantic infatuation makes sense, right? He has a romantic infatuation with Grindelwald. He feels, understandably, I mean, resentful and trapped by this sudden turn his life has taken. Yeah, right? Like, he's a brilliant wizard, and he knows it. And, you know, there is that thing that happened to Ariana, and, you know, with the right words said by the right person, you can see how this happens.
Yeah, well, right? And too, right? So that is, so, like, you can kind of imagine, like, they've been talking about it that day and over the weeks, and now here Dumbledore is, like, back at night alone, sort of mulling it over, penning this letter. And so he wasn't wasn't immediately like, ooh, yeah, like, that's what it is, but, like, maybe if we kind of spin it this way, you know, it could maybe work.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay, well, let's not make any bones about it. This is not a good look. This is not something one should be advocating. And Hermione tries to defend Dumbledore, saying, and I mean correctly saying, obviously he changed his mind.
Right. Like, all of his adult life, he's been sort of a champion for equality and muggle rights and stuff. Though, I mean, part of what's yes. at the crux of this debate, too, is a little bit, is that related to the statute of secrecy. And I think there's maybe a valid debate yes. about that outside of, like, wizard dominance, if there should be, like, is it necessary to be that secret?
Mm-hmm. It certainly makes everyone's lives simpler.
Well, yeah, and, like, they were persecuted at one point and whatnot. But you could yeah. imagine where that in the course of wizarding history went differently or came back up for debate and maybe, yeah. like, there was a process of integration or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because that also, I mean, it does, like, that secrecy then in some way feeds some of the anti-muggle sentiments. They get overblown.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, Hermione tries to argue, okay, obviously he changed. People make mistakes. He was young. Not what Harry wanted to hear.
I'm young. I'm out here fighting the Dark Lord. Dumbledore told me to do it.
Yeah, I mean, he has a point, right?
Right, so Dumbledore uses Harry to compensate a little bit for himself.
Well, I just mean, like, they were young is not a great defense. Especially of something like this. It doesn't mean you're incapable of being a moral human being.
Yeah.
Hermione would never do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But as we've talked about Hermione's perceptiveness, she hits it right on the head. The real reason you're angry is that he didn't tell you this himself.
Yeah. Which, I get, like, so, I think that's accurate in Harry's emotion. There are certain things Dumbledore certainly probably should have told Harry, but again, I think Harry overestimated the intimacy that he, one, thought he had, but also what should be expected. He thought he knew him super well, and now he doesn't. But maybe, uh-huh. Harry, it's not your place to know Dumbledore super well.
Yeah, I mean, okay, we'll say, so we past the letter part in the book, we also get Grindelwald was at their house when Ariana mm-hmm. died and then leaves directly after and they don't see each yes. other anymore. Okay, suspicious. And I think we kind of knew this, but it's reiterated that Dumbledore does not duel Grindelwald until well after his rise to power. And that there's a lot of questioning about why Dumbledore wasn't doing something.
Because of his personal connection.
Yeah. But which mm-hmm. people didn't really know about. So, I mean, you could think of it as, well, maybe this would have been a good thing to talk to Harry about, like, the mistakes that he made and how he got tied up with Grindelwald, considering, like, what Harry's facing and that he sometimes shares Voldemort's, you know, visions and he's special in a different but similar way that Albus was special, you know. But that's leaving out the part where telling that story is not just, I made a mistake and had a bad friend. It's, oh, my sister died and it might have been my fault.
Right, there's personal, you know, things in there.
Yes. More personal than yeah. Harry can imagine. Well,
and Dumbledore, he does, in much more vague in general terms, like, admits to Harry that he is fallible. So Harry, like, has seen that expressed by Dumbledore. And I think takes a little bit of comfort in that. But is this what you're going to read about? I mean, I think he does make a good point, though, about... But the thing that is actually problematic is that Dumbledore... Like, I trusted Dumbledore blindly, which he sort of expected and asked me to do. But now, all that was built around seemingly is not true. So what the heck am I doing?
Yeah. I mean, he goes off on a rant, a very hairy rant, but I think one that's much more sympathetic than his usual hairy rants. Like, he has some excellent points. It's like the very last page of the chapter. You know, Hermione has just told him, you know, you're angry that he didn't tell you this himself. Harry says, maybe I am. And he flung his arms over his head, hardly knowing whether he was trying to hold in his anger or protect himself from the weight of his own disillusionment. Look what he asked from me, Hermione. Risk your life, Harry. And again, and again. And don't expect me to explain everything. Just trust me blindly. Trust that I know what I'm doing. Trust me even though I don't trust you. Never the whole truth. Never. And a little later, Hermione tries to say, he loved you. I know he loved you. I don't know who he loved, Hermione, but it was never me. This isn't love, the mess he left me in. He shared a damn sight more of what he was really thinking with Gellert Grindelwald than he ever shared with me.
Yeah.
Kind of true.
Right. I mean, I think what's a little bit inaccurate is, even though I get how he feels it, right? You know, I trusted him, but he didn't trust me. One, again, at least at the beginning, you were 11. But it's really not that Dumbledore didn't trust them. Harry, it's in some ways, like you talked about, like, he didn't quite trust himself in this. And he was, like, trying to protect Harry. Like, you poor child, you've already done so much. I already kind of think this is not going to go well for you going forward. Can't you have a few more moments of normalcy in your life? Not that you can't handle it. You've proven yourself again and again you can handle it. You're trustworthy. But I want to spare you. And, like, that is the sort of the care and the compassion that Hermione points out that Dumbledore does have for Harry.
And this is how he explains not telling Harry about the prophecy. Is I put it off and I put it off because you didn't need that. But Harry's also right in that it's risk your life again and again, Harry. It's like we've discussed throughout these books that Dumbledore definitely seems to be leaving room for these children to do crazy things. Right? You know, the Sorcerer's Stone and all that stuff. Like, he's not the most protective.
Yeah, I mean, like, they go running into a lot of it, but he gives them some space to sort of figure it out.
Yeah, and it's not always clear exactly how much he knows and how much space he's giving, but we certainly have suspicions. Right, and we're getting caught. I mean, there's two frustrations here that are coming out in one. And it's, you never told me this. What the heck? I didn't know you at all on a personal level. And the, oh yeah, I'm still in a freaking tent with no idea what to do except I have to destroy Voldemort.
Yep. Which, I mean, though.
Okay, valid.
In some ways, what more could Dumbledore have told them to help with the Horcruxes?
Well,
there's that.
The Deathly Hallows. Right, because he sends them, I'm pretty sure, like, his portrait or memory or whatever kind of explains this at the end, but, like, he sets up a freaking breadcrumb trail of riddles for them so that they will find it slowly. Because he doesn't trust Harry in a certain regard, right? He's afraid he's going to get obsessed with the Deathly Hallows, and he needs to remember that it's the Horcruxes that's the key. So he's purposefully obfuscating that information.
See, now this is where I'm getting confused again, because, again, in some ways, like, what is the point of the Deathly Hallows? Why do they need to know that anyway? Like, why did they need to have the trail about the Deathly Hallows to begin with?
Yeah, okay, obviously, like, the Elder Wand is a big thing,
but
that comes to a head at the okay, end.
Even if we didn't know that.
And in the stone. Oh, there's that. The stone. Yes.
But would we really need to know that in order for that to come into play later? Like, sure, it's a good storyline, but...
Yeah. I don't know. Uh-huh. I think, you know, we need to read the whole thing again before we really, you know, are able to offer opinions on it. But it's that's a good point. Because it's not
like Dumbledore knew where the other Horcruxes were and what exactly to do with them. Like, did he lay all his cards on the table? Certainly not. But he, especially if you sort of step back the importance of the Deathly Hallows, didn't have a ton more to offer them. In the actual quest.
Yes, okay,
for but what he has to accomplish.
Yes, but okay, I think if there's a weakness there, that's a weakness of sort of the plotting of the Deathly Hallows. And, like, if we just take it as I think it's intended to be taken, that the Deathly Hallows are important and that Dumbledore thinks they're important for the resolution of this story, then he's holding out on them. And he says as much that, like, he's afraid of what would happen if he just dumps this information in Harry's lap.
You have been tasked with doing this almost undoable thing. But oh, by the way, there's this other sort of interesting thing that might make you invincible in a lot of ways. And you already have a key component of it. So, especially when you have no real information on the terrible, difficult task, you know, it could be alluring.
Oh, except there's one really big about thing himself that Dumbledore doesn't tell Harry. Yeah.
Oh, okay, dude, well, would just not sure be you're useful. A Horcrux.
I mean, certainly there's a reason. There's a plenty of reasonable people would conclude the same way Dumbledore does. Right? But I think as Harry, you're allowed to feel like that's not the correct conclusion. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't even know that part yet, but obviously that's a huge thing that Dumbledore is hiding.
That's for later.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It's kind of interesting how, I mean, Dumbledore starts as the, like, the tropey old wise man, and he's so much more complicated than that.
Like, he's a good character in that way.
Yes. And really, we only get a sense, not only, but much of our sense of Dumbledore's character comes out in this book after his death. Yeah. And so, like Harry, but we thought we knew Dumbledore. But I still want to hold on to that Dumbledore.
Yes.
Well, but that Dumbledore is real. Lemon drop Dumbledore, and, you know, Harry can't see that right now, but... Okay. So, next time. 19, 20, and 21. Oh. The Silver Doe.
That's like... That sort of starts the positive, slightly, kind of weirdly positive trajectory.
Well, at least Ron comes back.
Yeah, and we get the sword.
Yeah. Xenophilius Lovegood.
Good, but horrible.
And the Tale of the Three Brothers.
Yeah, see now, like, we're a little bit out of the angst in the woods. Like, we start to finally get a little bit of information flowing.
Yes, we have something to uncover. Okay. So that will be good. Tune in next time for that. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Weird Sisters Pod. And if you'd like to rate and review us on iTunes, that would be much appreciated. And we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye. Bye.